Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. I'm your host, Hal. We have two guests here today. One shares the same exact name as me. That's a first. Chi Hao, she's the partner of private enterprise in clients and markets in Vietnam. And then we have Daniel Tremarki. He is the family business and private clients director from KPMG Australia. KPMG Australia, Vietnam, and Asia Pacific, I believe, is in town this week, looking over milestones, looking over achievements, looking ahead. We've had the pleasure of having Daniel join us in the studio here today to talk about a topic that is very close to Vietnam business. And we'd like to also have, of course, Chi Hao comment on a few of those, especially on private enterprises. So welcome both today to the Vietcetera studio.
Good afternoon. Yes. Thank you very much for having us.
Daniel,
thank you.
Likewise.
No, it's good to be here.
Now, a lot of our audience are youngsters. We have, on average, in the tens of thousands, young people listening to this episode, this podcast every week, covering everything from real estate to technology, and then we have consultancies like KPMG advisory businesses. Mm. If you were to explain to a young person what KPMG does exactly, we'd love to hear what that is. So I'll start with Chi Hao, because you're Vietnamese. A lot of young Vietnamese listeners are listening and thinking about what to do with their careers. How do you explain what KPMG does?
Thank you. This is a great question. Mm. KPMG will support and working shoulder to shoulder to the entrepreneurs from starting having an idea to establish a company, set up the business model, and also help to track the performance based on your plan, and also helping to raise funds. So when you got succession plan, so basically from the starting with the idea until you want to exit the business.
Do you have anything to add to that too, Daniel?
Well, I think, I mean, there's both sides. There's the opportunity to come and work at KPMG and the opportunity to work with amazing clients and colleagues. But I think in terms of KPMG's solutions and offers, especially within the private enterprise space, it's working with family businesses. It's working with those emerging and innovative startups. It's working with private businesses across the globe to really help them, as Hao said, on that end-to-end journey. And bringing in the specialism of the wider firm that we have, but with the understanding that family businesses and private companies do think and act differently to listed companies and multinational companies.
So that's a good tip there for the audience listening. And, you know, for me to work in media, I get to meet folks from food and beverage to banking. This was just today, actually, and now advisory business work. If you're not into media and you're more on the back end of things, talk to the folks at KPMG for something new. Let's talk about your roles and some examples of how you guys engage with private businesses that showcases the value and impact of what you do. I know that's a very broad question. You probably have NDAs as well, so we can't name names here. A lot of entrepreneurs, young and old, they have this kind of ego where they think, oh, we could do everything. But me, myself, as an entrepreneur, I mean, I thought I could do everything as well, but slowly, either it be teams within your company or externally as advisors, individual mentors, whatever you want to call it, companies, they guide you to that next chapter. And I personally couldn't recommend it enough. We're a pretty small company, but maybe in the future with KPMG, let's see. Daniel, same over to you. Family business in a place like Australia. I'm already imagining what kind of businesses exist, everything from wineries, perhaps, to real estate, to mining, perhaps. Walk us through a couple cases that you've worked on that helped them realize that next chapter of growth.
Yeah, I think it's building off what you were saying earlier as well, is a lot of what we do is helping families remain successful. And usually at that point of generational transition, there's a point to revisit, well, how do we do things as a family? How do we make decisions? Who makes the decisions? How do we communicate? What do we communicate? Really, at that point, I was working with a family a few months ago, an agricultural farming family, and it was three brothers who were in the second generation. They had inherited the business from their father and spent their lives working on this farm. They had six kids between them, of who four worked in the business and two had careers outside the business. And so the conversation that we were having with them was around, well, as you look to retire, the second generation brothers, and as you look to pass on this business, what does that look like? And I think, as you said, for a lot of senior or older entrepreneurs who have spent their life in control, making decisions, having that speed and agility, letting go can be tough. And we look at the transition process from both the next gen perspective and the senior generation perspective to say, well, how do we create a transition that helps both generations achieve what they want, but also maintain the success of the business?
Side question, who usually initiates the need for that intervention? Is it the younger generation? Is it the older generation? Just from your perspective.
I would say there's three groups that usually come to us. So the first two are the two you've mentioned. It's either the next generation who are trying to drive change and they're finding it hard to connect with their parents or to start the conversation. So they're looking to someone who's got that experience, but also that independence to help drive that conversation. In other cases, it is the senior generation who gets stuck in that question of what next, or they see their contemporaries dealing with this problem and seeing, well, how am I going to deal with it? And then the third group is often the management teams within these businesses who may be non-family, who can see this and see the impact it may have on the business going forward, to say, well, the owning family here needs support, and we need to find a way to help them unlock the next chapter of this of this journey.
You guys are a therapist.
In some ways, it can be quite an emotional experience. I've had clients that I've worked with where you're having conversations and they're in tears because they're dealing with issues that may be very personal, very family-based, and they don't have an avenue to share. So
amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I would say in Vietnam, and this is, again, just me speaking out loud, there are very few resources for that. There really are. And I think it's driven by demand, of course. The demand there wasn't there previously, but we're just talking off camera that the next gen, they're the ones now graduating university, either coming back home after some experience abroad, or maybe they've worked for a couple years and they're now entering the family business after getting some experience on that belt. This is happening right now in Vietnam, so very relevant conversation. Thank you, Daniel. I know that was just a high-level kind of overview, guys, but we're going to dig even deeper now, which leads me to my next question. What are some of the pain points that these private enterprises and family businesses, those are pretty synonymous words, I guess you could say, face in Vietnam? So Chi Hao, I'm going to start with you. You work with clients here in Vietnam, of course. What are some of those high, like top priority pain points that you keep seeing come up over and over again that all businesses face in this category?
The biggest challenge for private business in Vietnam is the people. Normally, when the company started and then small, and those loyalty staff together with the firm, and then when the firm grow bigger and very fast, and the people couldn't catch up with the necessary skills to serve the requirements from a work and business perspective. But then very difficult to replace people, I mean, in terms of, especially for those loyalty one. It's not easy for the new professional staff to come and join the quite big legacy as well. Not that we have to replace everyone there, but more we need to create a mechanism, a structure, a governance, so that we can invite new expertise and professionals to join. And for those already with the firm, definitely everyone will have the role to play. And as long as we consider fairly what they can contribute and whether the business needs require a new skill sets, then should be good.
Okay, skill sets, big one. Same over to you. Daniel, pain points, maybe specific ones that you can highlight that perhaps you haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'd probably split it into two categories. So on the business side, I think, I mean, talent, attracting and retaining talent is huge. The other one is the digital kind of evolution and speed of digitization in a lot of these family businesses. And that's often, I know we'll touch on innovation a bit later, but the role of the next generation to bring new ideas, new ways of working, there's often a bit of a myth that family businesses are very old, they're very kind of slow, they're very kind of old-fashioned, and that's just not the case with a lot of families. So I think embracing technology, embracing digitization, and looking at that as a way forward, that can be a pain point when not addressed. On the family side, the biggest one is that conversation around succession, around continuity. We talked earlier about family members returning back into the business, finding roles for them, and finding ways to make sure it's right for the family and it's right for the business can be a pain point if not managed effectively.
Okay. The show is called Vietnam Innovators. I think as an advisory business, you guys not only walk clients through certain processes, right? The outcome is up to them at the end of the day, but the processes are there to achieve that outcome. What are some solutions and innovations that KPMG has developed recently to help make that process even better than what is a year ago, let's say? Jihao, so I'll start with you. Could you highlight one or two examples that you perhaps have worked, implemented across your workflow recently?
Because clearly private business do not have such a rich resource like foreign invested entities state-owned entities. So they need to find a better way of maximize their strengths to be successful in the market. So they always are very smart and agile, and innovation is clearly the critical for them. We provide so-called innovation service. So we got the process and we walk them through. We put the questions and collect the ideas from the teams as well as different multi-generations. And a lot of ideas come from not top management, but from the teams as well. And this can be realized to help the business to be more successful.
So it's almost like working within teams to find that innovation. It's not like necessarily just a technology or solution being implemented.
Not necessary, yes.
It's also working within teams to understand, instead of top down, it's bottom up, right?
Yes.
So, okay, interesting. Yeah, I like that. Same question over to you, Daniel.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to your point, the innovation side can be technology, but it can also be the people and the process side. And I think that's where, from a private enterprise and specifically from a family business perspective, we're seeing that innovation come from many different sources. And it's leading, I think, to one of the big trends I'm seeing globally is around the diversification of a lot of these families, entering new markets, entering adjacent industries. And to me, that's innovation in their thinking and their strategy. There's definitely, from to your original question, from a KPMG perspective, we're continuously embedding technology in how we work internally, how we interact with our clients, how we interact with the market, be it the avenues in which we share our thought leadership, be it the ways in which we collate and use data, and even in AI and the way that's going. I think it's a huge opportunity. We are a people business and we are a data business. And so we have to be thinking about that to stay relevant.
What role does innovation play in the long-term succession and sustainability of a private business, family business? Most of the more tycoon-level family businesses, let's put it that way, in Vietnam, they've been around 45, 50 years, maybe 30 plus at least.
Yes.
And they've never gone through a second generation. So if, let's say, I'm the child of a family business, how should I be thinking about innovation when it comes to be that succession plan?
That's the great criteria of the family business and private business. So Vietnam just started with the private business from 1986. So this is about the time transitioning, and the second generation now start joining the business after have very good education from overseas, from elsewhere, and got experience. And the great thing about family business is that they work for the business, not just simply to earn a living, but also to serve as responsible next generation to fulfill the responsibility within the family, to protect the legacy and to grow. So they bring in the new perspective, the new ideas, And normally the technologies or innovation ideas come from there. Plus with the knowledge, the wisdom from the founders and earlier generations, and then they combine very well resources to make the business successful.
I've got quite a few contacts of mine that are within this private sector, family business kind of community, mm-hmm. that whenever I meet with them, they're always, for example, asking me, hey, Hao, do you know anyone like in a place like China or on Australia that is in my business that I can connect with to learn how they did X, Y, Z, just so I can kind of forecast my own business. Have you guys did those exchanges geographically too? Like, have you brought communities from Australia perhaps, like physically to Vietnam to do like market visits and to chat with people, connect with people that could be relevant?
Well, I think, I mean, Hao's probably got the best example just yesterday.
Yeah, please, I'd love to.
That's why we got the ASPAC, Private Enterprise Leaderships meeting conference this week in Vietnam. We meet face-to-face, we share the knowledge, we share the discussion with client issues and challenges, and we understand how we can connect amongst each other as well. It connects between the clients. So actually, just meet this week, our colleagues in Hong Kong brought very big teams of investors from Hong Kong. A private business come to Vietnam. Some of them, our clients here, already put some investment, but some still searching for investments in Vietnam. They share with us their mandate, what they're searching for. Say, of course, we are the great mask maker, not only region but also global wise. We also got KPMG US connect us with Bank of America and brought in a real investors and share with us what they're interested. And sometimes, like, just mask making easily by knowing exactly this client is looking for the other one is having and also offering. So that's what we're offering.
Yes, we're a little biased here because we are Vietnamese. Daniel, you're visiting from Australia. But there's some interesting trends between Australia and Vietnam. For instance, it's the 50-year diplomatic relationship. Depends when this podcast is coming out, but Prime Minister Albanese is, coming this weekend to Vietnam for the first time in his term, and probably not the last. And there's also a bunch of initiatives happening on the private sector. So sitting from the Australian side, at least, where does Vietnam sit in terms of geographic expansion or investment interest for Australian families? Is it pretty up there right now, especially with, you know, some geopolitical changes happening in the Asia-Pacific region? Maybe you can share just a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the benefits for me being back in Asia-Pacific after spending kind of my last 7 years away from that is the connectivity within this region, and being in Australia. We're seeing a lot of excitement and a lot of appetite to be more connected, specifically regionally. And so Vietnam, as a country, as an opportunity to do business, there's amazing relationships at that private business level, and huge opportunities for companies to partner locally and regionally. So I think it's something, it's, as Hao said, one of the reasons that we chose Vietnam for a location for this meeting was it is a very vibrant and emerging market, both within the KPMG network, but within the private enterprise space. So,
a lot more Australian wine being sold in Vietnam, right?
Exactly.
Next question here, and it's for both of you. What emerging trends do you see in this particular sector, and how can businesses be proactive in seizing those opportunities at the moment? So for example, a trend could be the fact that these 20, 30 somethings are now taking over the family business. What trend can they capture as part of that bigger trend, I guess you could say? Start with Daniel.
Well, I think the first one that comes to mind is the rise of family office. And family office is a quite ill-defined term because it could mean something different to everyone. But what we're seeing is especially this next generation who are returning to the business or returning to the countries that they're from, they're creating this opportunity of how do I diversify our family's wealth, but also how do I manage it at an ownership level and as a steward for future generations. So what we're seeing is this generation is less about I need to be the next CEO of my business or our business, but actually I need to be a responsible steward of our wealth. And so I think that trend is creating opportunity for the next generation to forge their own career within the family wealth, in addition to just the family business. And it's creating an opportunity for them to connect, I think, at a wider level. When we're all fighting over one role or one opportunity and we have multiple siblings or cousins, often that can lead to anxiety or conflict. Whereas the next generation are now looking at it differently and saying, well, I'm going to interact with my business different to the way mum and dad did. And I think that's an exciting opportunity, but it's creating more questions and more choices.
That's a good perspective. I think a lot of the conversations have been about, oh, what do I do with my family business? Should I sell it? Should I just let it go? Or, but actually a better perspective is to start a new parallel institution to it, like a family office. So, which leads me to my next question, and we're taking it from a Vietnam perspective. Do family offices exist in Vietnam? Because I don't know that many. I think most invest through the corporation itself. And as a result, has other interests. So for example, if I was running a real estate business, it probably wouldn't make sense for me to invest in agriculture business, unless there's direct synergy. But using another structure, I guess you could say, that has the same stakeholders or many of the same, you could do that. So that's my question for you, Jihao. How are we actually seeing that happen? Is there a trend for that?
Just a few of our clients have family office.
Okay.
Most of them have blended style. So it's mean that combined between the business and the family. Some of the staff within the business also take the role of the family business.
Has that been working? Has that been working, would you say?
Yes, some of those. Ideally, should have the separate one. Because in fact, pretty simple. The family office just need the accounting skill, legal skill, and tax skill. So for accountants, then because of the confidentiality and information, and quite easy to recruit an accountant. So normally we recommend the family have their own accountant who are they trusted. Whereas the legal and tax, then make sure that the advisor need to have a wide breadth of knowledge and expertise. So our suggestion is to have the retainer service to
evaluate investments and
some firm like KPMG.
Okay.
Whereas most of the Vietnamese entrepreneurs are wider in terms of selecting and putting money in the different buckets. And most of the time, I found that the founders, the entrepreneurs decided themselves by the asset allocation. Some of them start to put some to the fund managers.
Okay.
Some portion of the to fund
managers.
Manager,
like venture capital investments.
Yes, for example, having the company like Reagan Capital, Indochina Capital, or Vina Capital
so
to manage some of the of their wealth.
Yeah. I mean, I do see that as an opportunity, a trend where private businesses like to kind of manage everything themselves. And even, let's say, for example, M&A opportunities. Instead of buying companies, it would be like, okay, let's just build it ourselves and see what happens. And usually that could be actually more expensive. I'm working as kind of an advisor to a business that works with Vietcetera. They're doing a rebranding effort, and they're a large consumer-facing business. They've had this business around for 30 years. It's a brand, household brand name, and they want to do a rebrand. And it's a generational ownership change. And I like the reasons for it, but the actual execution and outcome, I'm not sure. And those are two very different things. I think reasons and objectives, okay, makes sense. But the outcome is very, very risky. And it's about de-risking, especially if you're sitting on something that's already generating huge amounts of cash. It's very profitable. It's stable. Why change it? So I was trying to convince them in a way like, hey, instead of rebranding it, just keep it and just acquire another brand that's doing exactly what you want to do. And for them, they're like, oh, we didn't think about that. Right. So I think that's a big shift that's going to happen too, I think, within Vietnam. The idea that there are really strong, competent first-time founder, maybe mm-hmm. second-time founders who are starting small businesses that could benefit from a strategic investment or a merger or acquisition?
I think just building off that, one of the things we're seeing more globally, and I'd love to get kind of your perspectives on it, but the rise of founders and family businesses looking to establish advisory boards mm-hmm. and support in that sense, it's not about a loss of control or about kind of increasing complexity within your governance, but it's about having additional perspective.
Exactly.
And they're looking, if they're looking to go international, well, let's bring someone that has that international expertise. Mm-hmm. If we are dealing a lot with the financial institutions, do we have someone with banking experience? And mm-hmm. so especially the second gen and third gen, where they're looking to rethink their governance models, mm-hmm. The increase we're seeing in advisory boards and support through that yep. is, I think, very promising.
Because to your fantastic one.
To your yep. point, it's giving people a chance to still maintain your input, but you're tapping into some amazing sources of knowledge and experience.
Right, right. Yeah, you have two roles in a company. You have a shareholder and then you have an actual employee.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes if it's just not working for you as an individual anymore in the company, it's okay. You can yes. still step back or reduce your role, but you're still a shareholder. And that's great. And there's no reason to change that unless you somehow want to sell your shares. But
well, we talk about that a lot within families. We talk about wearing many hats. Mm-hmm. And so in many cases, the founding entrepreneur, it could be the head of the family, they're the majority shareholder, they're the chair of the board, which doesn't even exist,
yes.
and they're the CEO of the company. So to your to your point, their family governance, their shareholder governance, their board governance, and their management governance is one person,
right?
And it's the same person. And so we often talk about, well, giving up one hat, to your point, doesn't mean giving up another. Right. And I think that often helps people deal with that evolution, because often there's this fear of I'm either in or I'm out, and it's very binary. And I think the conversations we're having with a lot of families is it doesn't have to be binary.
Yeah. No,
you
like
can
that.
Find ways to find the role that you want and then build governance around that.
Right, right.
Building on that, it's become more complicated when there's more children join the business and in-laws and then the
you're trying to encourage fewer children.
Then conflict things, especially when the father hand over the legacy to children. And if the children do not work well together, this may impact significantly to the business.
From your perspective, how have private companies evolved over time? So I in Vietnam, and I'd love to hear the Australian example too, and I'll share a tidbit to give you context about how I frame this question. I have a friend that her family has worked in garment manufacturing for a very long time. The whole story is her father moved to the Eastern Europe in the 80s. This is when Vietnam had a worker exchange program with Eastern Europe in an attempt to upskill, educate people so they can come back when they were young to Vietnam and do the same thing in Vietnam. So in this case, he learned garment manufacturing and he came back to Vietnam. And at the time there were quotas related to certain industries, including garment manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So if you had one of the licenses for manufacturing, you could do pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few number of suppliers basically. Anyways, that quota went away. So obviously the business became less monopolized.
Yes.
And in an effort to diversify the business, moved to real estate. And that's where most of their business is now. So that goes back to my question, Jihao. I'm going to ask for your opinion first. How have private companies evolved and adapted to that transformation of Vietnam's economy? Opening its markets, reducing quotas, reducing regulation. How will private companies have to adapt with that changing market?
The private business evolving mainly from the because of the impacts from the business environment.
Next question. Actually, this question is only for Hao because it has to do with Vietnam. How does KPMG assess the risks and opportunities for private businesses? Like, I'm a client. I'm coming to you, and I'm like, okay, here's my huge mess. How do you organize this mess? Just walk me through your first six, is there a 60-day plan? Is there a 90-day plan? What does that look like?
Yes, most of the time when we meet a private business owners, the questions is what you just mentioned.
They just give you a big mess.
Yes. And like, so as long as the founder or the owners want to get it right, then we definitely can help. So we come in slowly with a diagnostic by looking at what you have. We charted out the roadmap to get it right.
Mm. Okay. Good, nice, short, sweet answer. Daniel, over to you. Next question. This is the idea of unlocking sustainability. Actually, we just had an ESG conference hosted by Vitcetera, sponsored by KPMG. Actually, probably Jihao knows, but Daniel, you've just been here for a few days. And when we talk about sustainability, it's not just the environment. Okay, yes, there's that. The sustainability of how a business runs, culturally, governance-wise, financial reporting, all these different things. Mm-hmm. I'd like for you to share about what KPMG emphasizes in terms of how to unlock sustainability at a company. How can private enterprises achieve those keys to success, I guess you could say?
It's a great question, and there's not a day that goes by that ESG isn't on the agenda and that conversation around how, and I really like the way you positioned it there, because in order to have that sustainability impact on planet and people, you first need to be sustainable as an enterprise. And so I think one of the biggest things we've seen is stakeholder capitalism has replaced shareholder capitalism. Mm. And that's even in private companies, where the shareholder group as a private company is often beholden to no one. Mm. It is able to make decisions on their own, but they're recognizing that actually from a stakeholder perspective, their customers, their supply chain, their employees, the community in which they operate, sustainability is not a nice to have. It's a business imperative. And you need to be able to demonstrate in all parts of your business how you are contributing to that in a positive way.
I love that. I here in Vietnam, again, it's an evolution of incomes and opportunity for Vietnamese people. They have more opportunities than before. It's the idea of quotas, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. And one thing I observed as someone that's worked for most of my life professionally in the U.S., but spent a lot of time here in Vietnam now too, is that talent. Mm-hmm. Talent has historically, in a very negative sense, been seen as disposable. There's so many young people. I can let you go and another one joins, which may or may not be true. Mm. But it's not about just replacing people. It's about that development of people to get the most out of their potential and so they can be sustainable themselves and add value to the business. It's not just like, oh, this is not working. Okay, sometimes that has to happen, obviously, but you get my point, right? It's like you can't purposely just keep salaries low because there's a quota or, you know, a salary cap or something. At some point, that's going to break because shareholder capitalism is one reason, but it's not sustainable, right?
So the concept of talent attraction and retention, and we touched on talent earlier, but especially in these upcoming generations, the sense of purpose is critical. And we have candidates coming to KPMG, and the question isn't kind of like, why should we work for you? It's kind of, well, why should you hire us? Mm. And so there really is a need to be able to demonstrate your sense of investing in your people, being able to show them a career path, being able to show them ways that they can continue to learn and develop. Because you're right, it's not just an idea of, well, we'll hire 10 and we hope that all 10 stay, but if not, we'll hire another 10. I think those days are gone and people want to work with businesses that have aligned purposes to what they want and what they believe in, which from a sustainability and an ESG perspective is critical.
It's also about understanding what young people, how they behave, wanting and all that, what they want is one thing. I was just at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and ironically, it was called the Young Leaders Summit, and everyone there was above the age of 40. I'm 30. And I was explaining how young people, they discover things using like TikTok these days. Mm-hmm. So they instead of searching on Google, they search on TikTok.
Yeah.
Just as a short example. And the people around me were like blown away by that. They're like, what? And I was like, yeah, you know, we as older people, we use Google because we kind of grew up in that age as laptop laptop warriors, keyboard warriors. But young people, they're on their phones much more, and platform like TikTok, for instance, it's more native on mobile. So if their behavior is there, that's what's going to drive them for user adoption. Mm-hmm. The generation of business leaders I was with was blown away by that. And I was like, yeah, we kind of have to know where young people are in order to speak their lingo. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be that lingo, but if we understand it, we're more likely to be sustainable as a result. So I see ESG not as just some fluffy, and hopefully you guys too, like nonprofit kind of initiative. Nah. It's actually a huge for-profit initiative if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or at least understand it.
Agreed.
So very interesting. Well, we're on our last question here. Jihao and Daniel, thank you for being on today's podcast. This is the last question on paper, and then I have another question for you at the end. But I'm, let's say, looking to land a job at KPMG. I'm a fresh grad. Either perhaps I'm from abroad right now. I'm just graduating university here in Vietnam. I'm thinking about joining KPMG. What advice do you have for these potential candidates? And how does it compare to when you joined KPMG? Mm-hmm. Is it different? Is it the same and consistent? Maybe we'll start with Daniel and then Jihao.
I think, I mean, the best advice I can give is be curious. Mm. I think there's enough information out there these days around what different businesses and industries are like, and there's opportunities to try and to learn. But one of the things I loved about coming to KPMG 14 years ago was the exposure to working with some great people, with great clients, and having an international brand. Mm-hmm. And so my curiosity is what led me to spending time in the UK, spending time in Canada, being able to work with colleagues all over the world. It's that curiosity around how can we help mm-hmm. the clients that we're working with, and how can we be proactive and practical. I think a lot of our clients are looking for good support, but they're also looking for practical support. And I think if you can demonstrate that curiosity and that ability to learn and engage, it's a skill that you may not learn at a university or in a textbook, but it's definitely a skill that I've enjoyed and tried to nurture and try to do that in my teams as well.
Okay. And Jihao, last over to you as well.
KPMG Vietnam recruits at least 300 new grads every year. So opportunities there.
Will they have the chance to work with you if they join?
Of course.
Okay. Well, hopefully that's a good reason enough.
Exactly.
I have one last question here. And we have you two on the show today because you guys are experts in what you do. You work with clients, family businesses, private enterprises, think about how they work, de-risking challenges, opportunity, all these different things. Now, this podcast, the only reason why it exists is because people want to hear about other industries that they want to learn from. So I have this question that I always ask guests, and I'm going to start with Jihao here. If you were listening to the podcast, what kind of guest or industry, if it was in the title of the podcast that comes up on the next episode, would make you click on that episode to listen? Maybe it's about the airline industry because you have no idea what's going on there, but you've always been curious about it. So what would that company, industry, or brand be? You don't have to name names, but it could be a general question. Same question to you, Daniel, mm-hmm. as well.
In KPMG, we always believe that each of us just good at certain things mm-hmm. and in depth so that we can be expert.
Yes.
In that field.
Exactly. Yeah.
The luxury we have is we work together, combine of knowledge and with the KPMG methodologies. So each of us will be allocated to specific industry and sector. So we also have the sector focus. Mm. So I myself focus on real estate.
Real estate, okay.
Yeah, so anything related to real estate, I will read. Yes, but of course, the related one, like the macro, definitely will impact real estate. I will click on.
Okay, yeah. So you like to listen to more macro kind of conversations, see what's going on, so you get a pulse of what's going on. Okay, very good. Daniel, for you, I mean, you're from Australia. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've had a million questions going through your head when you're flying into Ho Chi Minh City. How long the immigration line will be? How do I get a taxi? All these different questions. What went through your mind as you were, you know, in the car this morning going to the meeting? And what were you observing? What were you curious about? I'd love to hear from you.
I mean, I think being part of our global and our regional team, I've been able to visit a lot of our cities, a lot of our offices. and see the cultural differences that exist. I think kind of coming back to your question in terms of what topic excites me or what topic I'm passionate about, I think one I personally enjoy and what a lot of my clients are looking for is what we're terming or what we're looking at is this idea of financial literacy. And so it can be as simple as understanding how to invest, to manage money. I think doesn't matter whether you're kind of in a multinational, multi-generational, high net worth family business or you're kind of a student just starting out in your career. I think as a skill set, that's something that I've always wanted to pursue and understand more of and listen to people around. And I think to your point of kind of visiting and traveling, watching how that changes across different countries and across different jurisdictions is quite fascinating because I don't think anyone does it perfectly and I think everyone has their own perspective on it, but it's a great topic that no matter where you sit or what you do, it's of relevance. So it's not a sector per se, but it's a kind of topic of importance, I think.
So big takeaways there. We should do a daily show about macro stuff in Vietnam, perhaps. And then for Daniel on your side about how people think about money and investment in Vietnam in particular, that would be also quite interesting. Well, thank you so much for joining today's show, Di Hao. And also Daniel visiting from KPMG Australia. It's been a pleasure to learn about what you guys do, maybe share some insights, of course, to our audience. And I've definitely learned a thing or two. So thank you so much for joining the show. Hope to have you back in Vietnam soon, Daniel. Perhaps even move here if your colleague can convince you. Hopefully your boss in Australia is not listening today. That's about it. So thank you again. And for everyone tuning in, see you next time. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Insights illuminate better choices, allowing us to see differently and do more. With KPMG, you have the people and technologies to uncover insights and turn them into action. When we act on insight with the right people by our side, opportunity is everywhere. Let insights reveal new opportunities.
You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.